Hello, I am Cindy, and together with Terry
Hello.
and our special guest, we have a podcast series that looks at some important issues in healthcare. Our new series on substance use disorder reviews different treatment options in the U.S., with the goal to help motivate the roughly 40 million individuals in the U.S. who could benefit from substance use treatment and take that first step toward recovery. Sadly, less than 2% of those struggling with addiction actually receive treatment. In our series, we are also interested in how digital health technologies and other innovations can improve access to care for patients. So, if you are unsure whether you are one of the millions of people with an addiction disorder, or if you are pretty certain that you do, please listen to the advice and experiences of the medical and professional experts on our podcast and feel free to reach out to their organizations directly. Our episode today is entitled Empowering Recovery: Experiences in Patient-Centered Treatment and features Kelsey Roy, Director of Admissions at Ascend Recovery Centers. Kelsey oversees the admission process for clients seeking addiction treatment and recovery services. She has nearly a decade of experience in the behavioral health field, working as an executive director, case manager, business rep, revenue cycle analyst, utilization review specialist. Her passion to help others and provide high quality and meaningful care to those in need began with her own experience with addiction and surviving a major health crisis. Today, Kelsey works tirelessly with the growing number of Ascend Recovery Centers and several other behavioral health veteran adolescent-focused substance use disorder care centers at both the board and advisory level. Kelsey, welcome to our podcast, and thank you for spending time with us today.
Thank you guys for having me. I'm very excited.
So, Kelsey, your journey from where you began to where you are today in your profession started with a very personal story. Do you mind telling our listeners about it?
Of course. So again, my name is Kelsey. Thank you so much for such a wonderful introduction. I got into this field due to a addiction that I had from probably from birth. That's my personal belief. I was born in Ann Arbor, Michigan, adopted by a wonderful family from Philadelphia, raised in the suburbs of Philadelphia. I had a very good childhood. My family comes from a higher income world, but I'm a big advocate for saying that it doesn't really matter where you come from or what your background looks like. Addiction can affect anyone. For me, as a kid, I had a really hard time fitting in, maintaining like long-term friendships, things like that. For me specifically, like what I like to say is I was too cool for the nerdy kids, I was too nerdy for the cool kids, and I just never really felt like I belonged anywhere. When I was about 14 or 15 years old, my parents divorced. I really didn't have any specific friends. I had a younger sister that had a boatload of friends, and she was the popular girl, and I just wanted to have someone. Like my sister had 10. For me, I never really had experimented with drugs. There was maybe I had smoked marijuana once or twice as a kid at a party, or maybe had a sip of a beer or something like that. But I don't have a progressive story. Offered me opiates, specifically heroin. My brain said, if I don't use these drugs right now, this is gonna think I'm a loser and never be my friend, and we will never hang out again. For me, I had just completed eighth grade. I had been like the face for the DARE program. I actually won the DARE contest, won the essay, stood in front of the school, read the essay, got a t-shirt, a teddy bear. I was like the poster child for don't do drugs. 3 months later, I was exposed to heroin, and I did it because I was so afraid that if I didn't do it, that I was going to have no one. And once I took the first time I took opiates, after that, my brain just always wanted more and more and more and more. I will say they do call me a luck of the draw addict. It's not genetic in my family. It's also not environmental. I didn't grow up around active drug addicts or active alcoholics, and no one in my biological family has any history of substance abuse either. So for me, it was the luck of the draw. So I continued to utilize heroin for about 4 years. When I was 17 years old, I graduated high school. I was getting ready to go to college. And about 2 weeks before that, I was admitted to University of Pennsylvania Hospital. I was diagnosed with endocarditis, which is a blood infection that eats away at your heart valves due to IV drug use. I did have open heart surgery. I had three of my valves fixed. During that process, my parents didn't know what rehab was. I didn't know what rehab was. My parents are Googling rehab near me. Eventually, they found a facility for me that I went to. Well, I was the oldest there because I had to go to an adolescent center. So everyone was like, oh, like she's our like rehab mom. So I finally felt this like sense of belonging, right? Like someone depended on me. And then when I left that facility, I went right back to that world of like, I have no one. And I ended up relapsing and struggling for a couple more years until I finally got clean and sober, relocated to South Florida. And I have been working in substance abuse ever since, substance abuse, mental health, both at the adult and adolescent level. And for me, it's kind of about understanding that it doesn't matter where you come from, what your background looks like, what trauma you experience, like it can happen to anyone at any time. And I'm a big advocate for just sharing my story so that I can reach other people and share with them, like, listen, there is another way. There is options. If you're struggling with mental health, if you're struggling with substance abuse, like there are places that can help you. Because when I was going through that, I didn't know who to call. I didn't know where to go. I didn't know. I think now, obviously, it's been several years and there's a lot more treatment accessibility, but I still think that is it's lacking in a lot of places. There's a lot of areas that doesn't have the type of help that they need. There's a lot of people that are struggling and that they don't know that there's another option.
So, Kelsey, your personal story is moving, and we are really appreciate you sharing it with others. Hopefully, your
Absolutely.
words will reach the many who may be going through a similar situation. It's relatable and may inspire them to seek treatment. So, from what we understand, an important part of your organization's philosophy is to make sure patients receive the treatment that best matches their needs, with staff energized by the mission and well-trained. Another key goal is to find ways to continuously improve Ascend's connection with the communities it serves. So, given that, I have some questions for you. Ascend Recovery operates in selected physical locations across several states. Can you comment on how these locations fit your strategy, bring services to communities that otherwise might not have facilities?
Of course. So our original facility is our West Palm Beach, Florida facility. We offer partial hospitalization program with community housing. That means is you are in 6 hours of group per day. You see an individual therapist. We have medical staff on site. So it's a little bit of a lower level of care from detoxification and residential, but it helps you to create a routine and get back into, what other people would call the normal world. That was our original location. Our main goal is to target areas where there is minimal to no substance use facilities. We now have opened an 8-bed detox residential facility in Albuquerque, New Mexico. We are the only facility in Albuquerque, New Mexico that is able to provide detox for alcohol and benzodiazepines in the Albuquerque area. There is a huge need for it. We are in the process of potentially getting Medicaid also, so that we're able to provide that same small, intimate, private care, even to those who might not be able to afford private health insurance. We also just recently opened in Charlotte, North Carolina. There is a huge need for substance abuse in mental health in that state as well, that specific location. And we also have recently opened a detox residential on the west coast of Florida. So what we've learned is there is a lot of treatment centers on the east coast in South Florida, and it's very, very vacant over there on the west coast. So we've actually just recently merged with a detox residential facility, medical detoxification as well as residential level, in Port Charlotte. And we have the hopes of opening in places that are not oversaturated. Our vision is to target those areas like Oregon or Kentucky or Wyoming, places where there's not a lot of treatment services, and kind of go in there and make it accessible for everyone.
Very interesting. You mentioned partial hospitalization. Can you give our listeners some information on ASCEND's day treatment program in a little more detail, as well as the medication-assisted treatment program, and why these programs are important to the communities you serve?
Sure. So partial hospitalization is what they also refer to as PHP. It is considered an outpatient service. So, you know, at that point, they have gone through medical detoxification and residential treatment, which are both inpatient treatments. It helps with, you know, if they're detoxing off substances or if they need medication management, they need to be stabilized on medication prior to dropping down to that lower level. Partial hospitalization is the bridge between detox and residential and IOP, which is intensive outpatient services, and OP, which is outpatient services. It is the way that we have it is it's Monday through Saturday. Groups run from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. Every single patient sees an individual therapist once or twice a week. We have very specific groups that are tailored for different things. You might have a group on a Tuesday that talks about coping skills, and you might have a group on Friday that is equine therapy. When, you know, you're going to the horse farm and you're getting, you know, experimental therapy outside of the actual facility. Now with the MAT is, you know, it stands for medication-assisted treatment. We at Ascend do offer it. We offer Suboxone as well as Sublocade. We also offer naltrexone with potential for long-term Vivitrol. And these services are very important because a lot of times you want to, specifically in opiate addicts, with the amount of increase in overdoses that have occurred since COVID, offering MAT is a harm reduction method that also can be less addictive than the actual drugs themselves. It can reduce cravings, and it can prevent these patients, these people, from going back to using the deadly substances. So like naltrexone is a medication that's given to prevent cravings, to reduce anxiety, and it's usually given 14 days after detox or residential treatment is completed. It is given in a pill form, and then, you know, as long as it's tolerable, we are advocates for long-term Vivitrol, which is an injection that blocks, if you were to take an opiate, it blocks those receptors. It makes you very ill, and you're not able to get that dopamine high that you would when usually utilizing drugs. Suboxone and Sublocade are very in the same in the similar way, as Suboxone is given in either a pill or a film form, and then with potential to get a shot that occurs every 30 days. And it has pretty much the same effects as the Vivitrol, but it does significantly help with opiate cravings. Also, there's been a lot of studies recently that the naltrexone and the Suboxone can also be very helpful for alcohol cravings as well. The world has moved a lot away from the Anabuse, which is a previous medication for alcohol cravings, and geared more towards both naltrexone and also Topamax. So we do offer those services because, you know, in the event that someone leaves our treatment center and they're doing great and they have a slip up, having that tool in what we call their toolbox, you know, it can save their life. Yes. So it's really all about having that harm reduction option.
Thanks. Regarding the Ascend logo, Healing Together, your partner in mental wellness and addiction recovery, do you see more patients today than from a few years ago who enter into treatment with co-occurring substance use or behavioral health conditions, both?
Yeah, for sure. So I would say for a long time, treatment centers have been treating the substance use disorder, right? Because it's the primary. The primary concern is get them off the drugs because it's killing them. what they sometimes didn't understand until the development over the last couple of years is that we, as humans, there's something going on inside of us that is causing us to try and use these drugs to minimize those feelings or experiences or traumas. So I would say that 85 to 90% of the patients that we see are either co-occurring or they have some unresolved trauma from their childhood or adulthood
Wow.
that really has affected them and has caused the drinking or the drug use. I think it took a even larger hit when COVID happened, just because so many people were isolated from, you know, social interaction and things like that, to the point that, like, now I have people that come into our centers that, like, don't even know how to have, like, conversations with humans. And so I think that by treating the substance use, obviously detox and residential treatment, you know, they're making sure that they're medically safe. And what that does is it allows us to come in on the back end and address, hey, give us your timeline of your life. What big events happened? What trauma was there? What caused you to take your first drink or drug? So that we can really kind of hone in on the underlying cause of that substance use or alcoholism, obviously. So yeah, I would say 100%, and not just Ascent. I mean, a lot of facilities have shifted as well to offer co-occurring services because there is such a need for it in the world.
So you have discussed a range of recovery services for individuals who've experienced trauma. If you can speak a bit more, such as post-traumatic stress syndrome, how does Ascend determine if an individual has suffered trauma and what kind of treatment program can they expect?
Yeah, so prior to admission with us, we do a full assessment, full biopsychosocial assessment. We do a trauma assessment. We do a bunch of assessments to kind of see what their treatment plan is going to consist of. Do we need specific trauma treatment? Do we need specific relapse prevention treatment? We offer a service called EMDR. It stands for eye movement desensitization and reprocessing. It is a type of therapy that is used a lot of times with veterans, with people that have childhood trauma, adulthood trauma, disaster trauma, whatever kind of trauma they have. It's like a different series of lights and moving your eyes in a certain way to kind of open your brain up to those experiences that might have been blocked out, because your brain is a very powerful mechanism that blocks out traumatic events. And so our clinical director actually is a board certified EMDR specialist. So he does EMDR with all of our trauma patients that are on that specific treatment plan, on that specific track. There's 8 phases of EMDR. I don't want to get too much into it. They occur over like several sessions. The first phase is really kind of like the assessment, assessing, explaining to the patient what EMDR is, getting all of the background. And then the following sessions that occur after that is the actual process of EMDR. We have seen a lot of success from this specific modality of therapy. We've seen a lot of people that have never been able to address their trauma in an appropriate way. And, you know, inevitably it had led to relapse or self-harm or vice versa. And we've seen people that become successful now because they've gone through this therapy. It's something that's done both in person. It can be done virtually over the Zoom, over the computer as well. So it's a very, very important tool that we offer at all our locations, you know, that can really help those people that have that underlying trauma that may be contributing to their substance use.
So now moving to outcomes, how do you ensure the patient is improving according to their treatment goals? And how do you measure the patient's recovery process?
Of course. So we are very small, intimate centers. So we are a group of small centers, right? So our Florida facility our partial hospitalization and intensive outpatient program in West Palm Beach. We only have 15 beds. Our detox and residential facility on the west coast of Florida is only 10. Our Albuquerque location is only 8. So with us having these small, petite, intimate programs, we're able to really tailor treatment plans based on what each individual patient needs. With that, it allows every single employee that works there, that's part of the organization, to be a part of everyone's process. I know what's going on with every single patient every day at all times. And that's really special because that means that even if they're not in group and they're at the housing and relaxing and whatever, those employees are fully aware of what's going on with that staff or with that patient as the, you know, administrative side, as the management side. We hold weekly meetings with clinical staff, weekly meetings with operational staff, weekly meetings with management staff to discuss actual patient cases to make sure and assess that they're on the correct path.
At a high level, without details, are there stories of recovery success from your program that stand out in your mind and that you would like to share?
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely, obviously HIPAA will prevent me from providing their specific information, but you know, I saw a woman who had struggled with alcoholism for about 30 years. Both of her parents were alcoholic. She was thrown through foster care. She was pretty much, she never knew a life without drinking or using drugs. And she had come through our program probably two times, 24-ish, maybe 25. And then we didn't hear from her for a while. So about 2 years ago, she called and she was right around 30 years old. And she said, "I really need help. I have no insurance. I don't want to live my life like this anymore." And we were lucky enough to offer a scholarship to that woman. And she is now one of our greatest success stories. She works in the treatment field, helping other people that struggle with alcoholism and substance abuse. And she is, you just look at her and there's this light in her eyes that we never saw. And that's one of the greatest gifts with our patients is we work with them so closely that we get to see that light come back inside of them that's been gone for so long.
Okay, Kelsey, Terry here. Thank you so much for your time thus far. We've spent a little time preparing for this podcast, and each time your positivity and enthusiasm are infectious. So thank you for that. If we could just figure out how to package you and distribute you throughout the country, a lot of people would benefit from that. So thanks.
Thank you.
And again, thanks. So we wanted to talk a little bit about Ascend and what it's doing going forward. You mentioned the scholarship program. Are there some other initiatives that you're offering to help expand treatment within the communities that you service?
Yes, I do a lot of, and my business development team as well, we do a lot of like physical community outreach, going to hospitals, going to municipal buildings, going to criminal defense lawyers, Marchman Act lawyers. We do airlines. We do all of the 5K walks. We do all of the awareness events. We, in both North Carolina and New Mexico, we are in the process of contracting for in-network insurances as well as Medicaid, so that we're able to service those people that aren't able to afford private health insurance. Because the facilities are so new, it takes a little bit of time, but our vision isn't to get rich off of treatment. It's to help people. In doing so, like, we will do whatever that takes. For us, it's about reaching those people. That's why we do offer scholarship. If we come across someone who is really, really wanting the treatment services, can't afford them, doesn't have health insurance, like, we are known to offer scholarships 100% because we want to help people. We offer very, very low cash pay treatment options, like lower than one day of service, but we just want to help whoever we can. Another thing that's very, very important for me specifically is I get phone calls from people all over the United States. If I don't have a treatment center in that state and I don't have a someone, I don't know someone that has a treatment center in that state. I will do whatever it takes to make sure that I find somewhere for every single person that calls me, whether they have no insurance, whether they have Medicaid, whether they have private insurance, no matter what they have, it's my mission to make sure I get them somewhere safe. They're taking the biggest step of their life by reaching out for help. And it's my job to make sure that I get them somewhere so that they can be successful, even if it's not with us.
Those are commendable steps. And I truly, both Cindy and I appreciate what Ascend Recovery does and what you do to just continue that reach into the community. But if you kind of flip that a little bit, and as you approach communities, what would you like to see communities do differently to better help you or organizations like Ascend to expand their outreach?
I think that inner cities usually have the highest amount of drug usage. I think that communities can do a better job of definitely like implementing certain programs for substance abuse, for the opiate epidemic, also for mental health, understanding that sometimes, like I'll give you an example, because I have experience with veterans, I hear horror stories of veterans getting picked up by police officers or drug addicts getting picked up by police officers and thrown into jail because they're in a psychotic state or they are suicidal or vice versa. And those people don't belong in jail. Those people belong in treatment. They belong in some sort of facility that can help address what those needs are. Those people aren't necessarily criminals. They're just struggling. There is so many people that are struggling and there's not enough help. And I think that a lot of times, like they just want, they're doing their best to clean up the city and clean up the streets, but they need to also be a little bit patient and understand that like these people are sick and they're not necessarily criminals. You have to be able to really evaluate like, how do we help these people instead of punishing them? They've been punishing themselves for so long that by you punishing them, you're just kind of like co-signing what they're already feeling.
Those are great words. Thank you. The empathy is an important element of all of this treatment. Telehealth. I know Ascend Recovery is a big believer and a big implementer of telehealth. You want to talk a bit about how you use it and where you think it's going to evolve to in the next several years?
Absolutely. So telehealth is a service that it is an intensive outpatient service. It is all virtually completed. So it's an amazing option for people that go through a medical detoxification or through a mental health residential facility to get stabilized on medications. But they might have little kids at home that they have to go back to. Or they might have a job that will only give them 5-10 days off of work. Or they have accentuating circumstances that wouldn't allow them to complete an in-person outpatient program. And so what telehealth brings to the table is the ability to help people all over the country, no matter what their circumstances. So at Ascend, we have telehealth at all of our locations. We offer groups 3 days a week for 3 hours per group. Each person enrolled in telehealth also receives one individual session per week. They're also given referrals for medication management based on where they are living. And it's a way for them to still get that outpatient therapy and treatment that they need while being a part of something in the group setting, but also holding them accountable to their behaviors when they return home or back to work or wherever they have gone. The really cool thing about it is like we can be in Florida and we can be treating someone that might not have any treatment in the entire state of Indiana or Kentucky or Maine or whatever. There might not be any options for them. We have that option, you know, that virtual option. It's I've had people on telehealth from Hawaii. Like we see people from all over the country. And for us to be able to get online all at once and really go through like what's going on and still get that consistent therapy and that sense of being a part of really cool. And to segue back to the EMDR, our clinical director is able to perform those EMDR services via telehealth. So if there is a specific patient that is in need of that trauma therapy, our clinical director is able to still complete that via telehealth, which has been very, very successful as well.
Fantastic. So for all the accomplishments from Ascend Recovery, and there are many, there's probably a couple that stand out. Is there one particular accomplishment that stands out from an organization perspective that you think will become part of your goals going forward?
So for us, we have a very special management team. It's made up of about, you know, 5 or 6 individuals. We first took over Ascend Florida in January of 2023, and from January of 2023 until now, we have successfully opened 4 facilities. We have implemented telehealth. We have created a massive alumni program. And the reason why we have done that is because everyone in our management organization has the same goal. We want to help the people that everyone forgets about. We want to reach the areas that nobody else wants to go to. For us, it's about reaching as many people as we can. And sometimes with larger organizations, like, patients are looked at as numbers. For us, people are looked at as people. And I think that's why we've been successful, because we all work so extremely hard to make sure that vision happens. We will do whatever we have to do to help whoever that we can.
Well, you certainly present a lot of great ideas and accomplishments and focuses for treatment centers. And this has been super advice, great advice. And you've really honed in on how to reach in through communities and to expand service for treatments. But if you were on stage and your audience consisted of a number of leading community members, treatment center specialists, and so forth, what advice might you offer to them to help them do their job better?
Well, the first thing I would say is I think that everybody needs to just, like, slow down a little bit, take a breath, and really understand that, like, we are dealing with human beings. Like, human lives are in our hands. People are not numbers. Listen, please listen to them. What they are telling you, if you're not listening, you're not going to understand. I think also, like, I would tell them, like, please do real community outreach wherever your center is, wherever you're from. Go to your municipal buildings, go to your hospitals, call your bail bondsmen, call the firefighters, call the police officers, call the news, put it on the news, whatever you need to do, and be very clear and concise on exactly what you offer, what your organization offers, or you as an individual offers, so that when people are online and trying to find new services, or on social media, or walking down the street, or wherever they're getting the information about your facility, it's very clear and concise on the type of treatment that you offer. Because a lot of times people just Google rehab near me and they click the first one and I need X, Y, and Z, and they say, yeah, 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 yeah. And then they get there and they're not getting the treatment they need. So it's important, even for the big corporate centers, to really be concise, be specific, and really hone in on how you're going to help. The other thing I would say is, like, we all as doctors, physicians, high-end level executives for treatment centers, we are all on the same path. We have the same mission, and we're not fighting against each other. We all need to be united in one front to reach as many people as we can. How are we helping these people, and how can we help each other to continue to reach as many people as we can?
Kelsey, I every time we talk, I feel more inspired. And again, I'm inspired by your words. Thank you so much. And thanks for participating in this podcast with us today. I think it's very clear that Ascend Recovery Centers fully understand the complexity and emotion of addiction. And you and your team and your entire organization have provided a wonderful, supportive, and empowering environment for a number of patients. And I know you'll continue to help many people. So again, from Cindy and I's perspective, thank you. We will do our best to get your message out into the communities and to expand this type of message as an educational process. So again, thanks so much.
Thank you for having
Thank you.
me. I appreciate it.